Welcome to Just the Taste. I'm Scott Curry with Chef's Desk. We gather to talk about the trends in marketing, retail, and production in food and beverage that are shaping the industry. Today, we speak with one of the most fascinating entrepreneurs we have had on this podcast. His name is Adam Lazar. Adam is CEO of Asarasi, producer of Asarasi Sparkling Tree Water, an organic bottled water from a plant-based source seeking to positively impact our environment by replacing the bottled water industry with the world's only renewable and sustainable organic source of pure water, all from maple trees. Prior to founding Asarasi, Adam was product development manager for 5-Eleven Tactical, a $250 million global consumer goods company leading the first responder, tactical, law enforcement, military, and outdoor channels. Adam, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Scott. Really appreciate it.
Great. So, fascinating, interesting product. I am flush with questions that I have about the production and just overall value of Asarasi. So, why don't you start off by telling us, our listeners, you know, what is sparkling tree water?
Sure. Yeah. You know, it's an odd thing to say, right? Because no one's ever experienced that in the way that we've propositioned the consumer with it. Sparkling tree water is a product that we created out of the byproduct of the sugar mapling process. So as maple producers actually create maple products, they harvest a voluminous sap from a number of different species of maple trees. And they remove the sugar content from those saps, leaving two products. One, highly saleable product, maple syrup, as they continue to distill that down into, concentrated syrups. And a 97% byproduct, a sugar-free maple sap. And that is what Asarasi is. We add a mild carbonation to the product and created the world's first sustainable and renewable bottled water that comes from a plant-based source.
Great. And why is it sparkling water? That was one of the things that struck me. I for some reason assumed it would be, you know, traditional flat water, given that's what nature gives us, I guess. So what led you to generating sparkling water?
Well, there was probably a 2 to 3-fold event that I think in my mind that really drove us to creating the sparkling product first. Most importantly, in terms of a business proposition, you know, that is the fastest growing category in the water segment. Mm-hmm. It will double to $4 billion out of the $14 billion bottled water market in 2020. And, it is one of the fastest growing categories because consumers are ditching, you know, unhealthy carbonated soft drinks for healthier options, mostly sparkling and sparkling flavored waters. So if you've seen the growth of, say, competitors like LaCroix or Dasani or, Perrier and Pellegrino and all the other various sparkling water brands in the grocery store and the proliferation of brands that are competing against each other in that space, that's what drove us to enter the sparkling category, which is this sheer tremendous amount of growth, and it'll grow 20% year over year for the next several years, uncontested. So, not to mention there's less competition in that space than there is in the flat water space, and the growth of the flat water category, well, you know, no pun intended, it's relatively flat. So, you know, people like bubbles, people like fun. Bubbles are fun. Let's give people a product that they can feel like they're getting more out of than just, you know, drinking boring bottled water. So that was really why we entered into the sparkling category first. Secondly, it's a price point sensitive marketplace in the flat water business where, you know, it's a race to the bottom in terms of pricing at the grocery store. And so we cannot possibly compete against the giants like, Nestle and Poland and a few others that you're probably well recognized. Their profitability on those products are very, very low because grocery store retailers put that in the center of the store to attract customers to walk the entire store because they need a commodity like bottled water in their life. So that was really kind of the multiples of drivers that drove us to be in the sparkling water segment. And so far, we've been very successful providing that product to consumers with a lot of accolades around it.
Great. Awesome. So you avoided the commodity race to the bottom and you know, followed the trend and, you know, created something unique that, you know, just from a business standpoint, you can ensure yourself some juicier margins. So you went to Hartwick College, middle, upper state New York. Assume there's a number of maple trees around there, but you got your MBA from Norwich, which from my own personal experience, have been driven through Vermont many, many, many times. Should I imagine that the idea struck you when you were, you know, walking among the beautiful maple trees that permeate the landscape? Tell me how you came up with this very, very unique idea.
Yeah, the genesis of this is interesting because, you know, you can walk around with your eyes wide shut all day long and never see the opportunity in front of you, right? And I was living in Vermont. I was working for a defense contractor there after finishing my MBA and making protective, you know, ballistic performance products for soldiers all over the world. And, you know, eye protection and armor and helmet and visor, et cetera. And, you know, it was, I recall the day because it was like a really cold February day. It was a Maple open house weekend. And I saw the signs driving home before the weekend started. But, you know, after going out to eat so many times, you know, you get like 8 months to 9 months of winter in Vermont. You know, it's summer starts and spring starts all at the same time and ends abruptly right at the same time. And you get 9 months of cold thereafter. So you get cabin fever fairly quickly. And by February, I can't go out to eat anymore. I can't go to the mall again with my daughter. What are we doing? I just grabbed my 3-year-old and got in the car and went and got lost. And in that process of getting lost, I stumbled across a maple open house and one of the larger producers there. And I guess to say the rest is history. You know, I witnessed this farmer literally throwing away 97% of the crop he had just harvested after removing the sugar content. And as a product developer, you know, the first thing you look for is utilization of materials, right? How do I utilize the most materials and maximize, you know, my cost of goods? And seeing this, I asked the farmer, what is that? I thought it was municipal water that they were throwing away as part of the processing. He says, oh, that's water that we have to use in processing. I said, well, tell me more about this. I'm interested. And he says, oh, you know, it's the waters we remove from the saps. And I said, well, how much is there? And he started to explain to me that just about every single day he was throwing away about 125,000 gallons.
Wow.
And I just stood there in shock. This is one producer out of, you know, 30,000 or 40,000 folks in the industry. And I thought to myself, you know, my first impression was, wow, this is highly wasteful as from its municipal water. Then that converted to wow, this is highly wasteful because you're not utilizing more than 3% of your crop because it's 3% sugar. And I said, Mr. Wood, why don't you do anything with this? He said, well, who'd want it? It's just water. And that statement stuck with me for a very long time because it was about his perception of the value of a commodity that he was throwing away as a waste byproduct that he didn't believe had any value because, well, you know, not only does he get water out of trees, but he can poke his finger in his backyard in the ground and up will bubble a little water. You know, it's very, very water-rich country in New England. But that doesn't make that the case everywhere else in the world, as we all know. And so it was really truly about perceptions and being able to identify market opportunity around a commodity byproduct. And I felt very compelled. I immediately after that visit, I went to a couple more, very curious, saw it happening again and again, and I realized there was a market opportunity. I went home that week and wrote the business plan and instantly shelved it. And I said, why? How would you possibly do this? What we're talking about is taking the scale of the dairy industry and starting it with one guy, me. It's impossible. And I gave up on it. And, you know, that's how I discovered it and undiscovered it at the same time, which will probably lead you to wanting to know how the hell I brought this product to market following.
I've got at least 500 questions from what you just said, and that is one of them. So let me try and work my way through these. So let's stick with kind of the, you know, the internal, if you will. What propelled you to take it off the shelf?
Well, if you fast forward 6 years, I realized at that time in 2008 that the new age beverage or specialty beverage market really was non-existent. I think Sobe Life Water was probably the first innovation amongst maybe Snapple iced tea, if you remember. You know, that was probably the most, you know, innovative new beverage of the late 90s. And, you know, that carried forward for several years. You know, coconut water really hadn't come out yet. If it was, it was in its early infancy. There really wasn't much out there. And I realized that, you know, changing the perceptions and hearts and minds of people on one end would be a big challenge and cost an absolute fortune in terms of tens of millions of dollars of education. But also, what was the catalyst for inspiration, right? And why would people care? And why should they? And frankly, there was no reason for them to care at that time. The whole environmental sustainability movement was just getting started. And then the other challenges of the dairy, I mean, how do you take a product from farm to table safely, effectively, and do it in such scale, cost effectively, that it could be done at a reasonable price point? And so all of these different challenges struck me as it wasn't the right opportunity. It was an opportunity that wasn't right for right now. And so I continued with my career in making law enforcement products, moved to Los Angeles, and worked for 5-11 Tactical as a category manager, making more products for enforcement soldiers around the world, and witnessed an epic drought. And I said, you know, this is not sustainable. You know, we're harvesting Ethos water from the, you know, how ethical is that? And we're, you know, taking billions of gallons from Nestle out of the mountains here. And it just didn't sit right with me. And, you know, here I am. I can't run my sprinklers because our reservoir is down to like 10%. You know, people are water shaming and, you know, calling the water police on their neighbors. It was awful. And I said, you know, this is not a way to family, nor is it a way to live. So I moved east and started the company. And as a result of that focus on sustainability, environmental responsibility, and of course, you know, giving people product in the organic space that they never had access to before has been the crux of our business. So
awesome. So help me understand the scale of the amount of water that is wasted. And I asked this question from a place of curiosity and have no interest in disparaging maple farmers. I'm just trying to understand, how much water do maple farmers discard each year, and how do I compare that to the amount of drinkable water? So you said that one farmer that you visited with your 3-year-old threw away, I think, 125,000 gallons of water every, I'm not sure if it's day or week, yet. I don't know if 125,000 gallons is a lot of water or not. I have no idea. I mean, I know it's measured in cubic hectares or something like that. So if you could try and help me or any other lay person just understand, is it a lot of water that's just discarded, or is it not a lot of water? How can you help me understand that?
Yeah, sure. So let me provide the backup kind of statistics around the industry and around, well, two industries: bottled water, of course, the maple industry. You know, so the bottled water industry bottled up about 11 billion gallons of water domestically in the United States alone this last year, and that number is growing. They took about 33 gallons of bottled water per average American per capita, right? So it's about 11 billion gallons is the rough numbers in terms of bottled water, and that's what was consumed. So 11 billion gallons in the bottled water industry, which is worth about $14 billion today, right? You look at the maple industry, and you have an industry that produced roughly 18 million gallons of maple syrup, worth roughly $30 a gallon at wholesale and $60 a gallon at retail, and threw away over 1 billion gallons.
Wow.
that is enough to replace 10% of the bottled water industry with just accessing the current byproduct that they produce today. Now, what if that percentage was very small? And I'll tell you right now, the maple market is only accessing 3% of what is available to them to process. So sky's the limit. What we're talking about here is literally hundreds of billions of accessible maple, birch, box alder, ash, walnut, about 22 different species of trees that could be tapped for their, without harming the tree, should I add, with while creating two valuable products, sugar and water, which are both highly sought after commodities, and frankly, give us a sustainable and renewable resource from the living well. The disadvantage is that it happens in a 90-day period out of every single year. So if you can figure out how to compress an entire year's worth of production into 90 days on a billion gallons worth of product, that's where our secret sauce in lies. So, you know, anybody can take a tanker load of something and put it in a bottle, but to be able to do that sustainably and do that repetitively and, you know, and have that quality consciousness around them becomes another story, right? So I like to say, and I'll for the sake of repeating myself, it bears repeating, that we don't sell a bottled water. We sell a paradigm shift in the way we think about the consumption of natural resources when it comes to water. And if we can get Americans or the rest of the world thinking that, hey, if I can simply do this and not that, I don't have to change my consumption habits at all, and I can have an ethical, conscious choice at the shelf where I did not have it yesterday. And by the way, I can also trust my source, implicitly trust my source because it's organic certified, at the same identical price as what I consume off the shelf today. We have a solution to our groundwater crisis, not only in this country, but a potential solution to replace the bottled water industry or water used in all food and beverage manufacturing, right? The reason that people haven't adopted this is because, well, frankly, it's more expensive to do this than it is to do that from a manufacturing perspective. But yet, even though that's the case, if I can sell you the same bottled water product that you've been buying at the grab-and-go cooler for many decades now for $1.49 a bottle, I've given you the same purchase price as you are getting in any other bottled water product at the shelf. The fun part is that it'll tell you how much profit at the single serve level bottled water companies have been making off you as a consumer for many, many decades to the tune of, you know, thousands of times markup. Whereas we as a company can sustainably operate on compressed margins because of the volume of availability and the volume of consumption and throughput that's there at the same price and give people that ethical choice without compromising your wallet in the process. So our goal as a company is, while yes, profitability is important, and of course cash flow and revenues with all of that wonderful business acumen is important, our focus is sharing the story with the world that, hey, there is a renewable and sustainable resource that you can trust that isn't been compromised by pollution or otherwise, and yet you don't have to compromise your personal consumption habit or your budget to resolve that difference. So that's our goal.
Wow, what a beautiful value proposition, disruptive value proposition. With any paradigm shift, there's hurdles, right? And I would think sometime during your 6 years of contemplation, you must have at least thought, water? Am I really gonna tackle water? And where I'm going with that is the notion of organic renewable water. And we have to admit maybe a little bit that there is an inherent assumption or bias, not bias, but an assumption that water is always renewable, right? Like since the third grade, we see the drawing with the clouds going over the ocean, and then they go evaporation, and then they go over the mountains, and then they rain down, and they go down through the watershed. It's a cycle, right? Which feels renewable, And then the idea of organic, which I'm wondering, because I think I read that you are the first or only organic certified water. Given that renewable and organic are two words that have been hijacked by virtually, you know, almost every industry at this point. Like maybe the car industry is the only one not calling itself organic right now. How do you plan to get over the hurdles? And is this a concern or worry? Because to a lot of people, I would assume that if I drill a well or I grab some water from Lake Champlain, perhaps, that that's renewable. And you mentioned pollution, and I grant you that. But then the idea of organic as well. So, and I'm guessing you're going to go somewhere along the way of trees, naturally filtered water, and remove pollutants and stuff. So that was a long ramble. If you followed me at all, could you speak to that?
Yes, of course. You know, it's, you're right. The terms renewable, sustainable, organic, you know, natural, you know, these are all what would we describe as marketing jargon, right? It allows companies to position otherwise commoditized and many Me Too products in with marketing differentiators. Frankly, all mean the same damn thing. And, you know, it's not very genuine or authentic. And I think that's where people often get misled. I'll give you a great example. We always heard, oh, blueberries are good for you. Or look at the antioxidants and the amino acids and the polyphenols and the mineral content. And the list goes on and on and on and on and on about the way that the food and beverage industry or any industry has tried to educate us on why something's better for us, healthier for us, and good for us. And the challenge that is, frankly, is that it's all hocus pocus. I mean, how many 5-gallon barrels or baskets of blueberries would you have to eat to really have a tremendous effect on your health with, I'm sure, dire consequences on the rear side? You know, it's, and I say that, you know, with a little bit of humor, but at the same point, we, you know, there's a balancing act that you as a consumer have to make good consumption decisions based upon, well, hopefully some basic level of intelligence that says, well, I know they're marketing to me. Let me dive into the ingredients if I care and determine if and make a good judgment decision for myself and my life, what I want to consume. And tackling the bottled water industry to say something's renewable and organic. So I think we've covered a lot of stuff in what your question was. But I'll give you a great example. You know, let's take the term sustainable and renewable, and because they kind of go hand in glove, you never see one without the other. And the reality is that water isn't it's a human right. It has to be available freely. The problem is that 20% of the fresh water supply in the world resides in the Great Lakes, right? So we have this wonderful, massive, incredible resource at our disposal here in the United States that's effectively untouchable. Because we have protections in place for this great resource for a reason. You know, we have a high level of saline water in the world that is very cost ineffective and highly pollutive to actually utilize. And so it's not really a good solution, although I'll tell you what, if we ran out of fresh water tomorrow, we would find a solution fairly quickly, except for it'd be at a high price. And so there's this delicate balancing act between sustainability, renewability, price sensitivity, and then of course authenticity or trust in your source. And there is barely a day that goes by that we're not bombarded by the news by you know, Aaron Brockovich stories of water contamination or challenges with, you know, municipal water supplies not being able to filter out, you know, these harmful carcinogens and things that came from firefighting chemicals, and the list goes on and on and on about the pollution of our ground and the way that our government is telling us they can treat it. So when I look at this space and I say, how do I disrupt and upend? How can I reinvent water? That's a really crazy statement, right? My mission is to go upend probably one of the largest industries in the consumer packaged goods space. And how do you do that? This takes David and makes David and Goliath look mild. And the reality is that when you look at data from, say, Mintel published a report that said 25% of consumers want organic bottled water. Well, they don't have it. It isn't accessible. No one's making it. It's not allowed to be certified that way. It is not inherently organic in the first place, and therefore it doesn't exist in that form. But why are people demanding organic? Because they really want confidence in the source of what they're consuming, just like they do in any other food product. And the problem with when you look at the organic space and you say, well, what is organic? And I look at a beverage like tea. I like tea. I'm going to pick on tea, not because I don't like it, but because I think it's an easy target right now for this conversation. I mean, you can have 1% organic tea leaf, 1% organic honey as a sweetener, and 98% municipally supplied Flint, Michigan water that's been purified multiple times over to remove contamination, and I will still have a 100% organic certified product. And so there's a lot of, I think there's a lot of lack of authenticity in that. And so, and there's lack of credibility. And so it does, I believe, a standard like the USDA, which is truly a marketing program to create opportunities around better for you, healthier for you foods, and more environmentally sustainable foods, that really harms the once you recognize there are alternative sources, harms the nature of that program. So when we came out and certified the world's first bottled water organic, we had a lot of people screaming, and still are, oh, it's not organic, it's an inorganic material, it doesn't da 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 da. The list goes on and on and on. But you know, if we did the same thing with apples or oranges or grapes or anything else, the fact is we've harvested a plant-based product, removed the sugar, and created a unflavored sparkling water product that truly is one of the purest forms of water you can buy that the plant produced itself. It consumed it, and it converted it to sugary saps, and then we removed the sugar, thereby leaving us back with a sugar-free plant juice, which elementally is pure water, but allows us to be able, just like anybody else, to say, hey, this is a plant-based product. We fit the definition of organics, and we can certify our source and certify our processing. We've created a niche opportunity for us that can literally upend the giant. And I think that that's where we'd like to go. You know, educating people on, you know, why is this better, healthier, bigger, faster, cheaper, or any of those other types of things that people want in their life. It really comes down to one value proposition for them beyond, you know, trust and sustainability and all those buzzwords and everything else we just talked about, or even organics. What it really comes down to is, can I afford this? Does this fit into my lifestyle? And, you know, can I easily make a replacement to consuming something else without affecting my current financial state? Because look, at the end of the day, it's all about the Benjamins. Whether you're, you know, rich or poor, like, you have to afford to live somewhere. So, you know, it truly is an opportunity for us to create a conversation around it. It certainly gets a lot of attention around it. And my hope is that, you know, we'll be able to create a market opportunity, not just for consumers to do the right thing for themselves and the environment, but also to advance a community of agricultural producers that affect the livelihoods of tens of thousands of people in North America. Look, if you don't care about organics and you don't care about sustainability, fine, that's fine. You're a perfectly entitled person, and that may not be something you care to believe in or care to adopt as a personal choice, but you should care about your future of your food. And if we don't support that economic system of food future and agriculture, we're not going to have a food future. And so there's plenty of impacts that we as a company can have, and certainly that is also a primary focus for us. So it's been an interesting opportunity, Sally.
Thanks for unpacking all that for me. You can assume right now that I'm standing and clapping and applauding everything you said there. Fascinating topic in itself. I we do need to move on to respect your time, because I think we could keep unpacking that for quite some time. I want to get to a few things. I think I heard there and understand that supporting these farmers is important. So share with our listeners how your business is supporting these maple tree farmers. probably in your local area, but I would assume that maple trees extend, you know, across a lot of the northern stretch and northern latitudes of the United States and Canada. So how are you supporting them, and where, you know, how can this scale up to further support them, across a wide geographic stretch?
Yeah, phenomenal question. And thanks for that. We as a company formed another organization called Osterossi Farms. We are a benefit corporation that exists to benefit maple producers, aka farmers, in the United States and Canada. And in the last 60 days, we're asking the entire maple community to partner with us. If you produce maple in any way, shape, or form, or birch or walnut or any other syrup products, partner with us to become a supplier. And raise your hand and say, I want to supply my byproducts to Osterossi Farms. Osterossi Farms has become the first cooperative-esque structure around this byproduct in the world. We've signed up over 100 suppliers in the last 60 days, aggregating tens of millions of gallons of supply opportunity that will allow us to represent this emerging market opportunity for these farms at the federal, state, local, and private levels. And what that does for the farms is it creates a market opportunity they didn't have before. And whether you're a supplier to us or not, we're going to lead the charge, and you can sell it to anybody you want. But if you align with Osterossi Farms and Osterossi as a brand, you've given us the privilege of representing this byproduct to hundreds, if not thousands, of different avenues of use, whether that's in soups and nutraceuticals or pharmaceuticals or baby formulas or frozen treats or you name it. We can literally affect the groundwater consumption in all of these types of food and beverage products. And so we today have tens of millions of gallons of this permeate. We hope to have a 250 million gallons under contract by the end of the year. And which will allow us to represent this byproduct to many, many companies that are looking to advance the conversation. We are creating private label opportunities. If Walmart wants to carry an organic bottled water on their shelves, fantastic. Let's have a conversation. If Costco wants to do the same thing, fantastic. Because, you know, at the end of the day, regardless of packaging type and recycled build materials and all that, if we can replace the bottled water or the consumption of groundwater to a plant-based water, and give people confidence and trust in their source, we've created an agricultural opportunity for these farms that advances the other core missions of the brand, you know, environmental sustainability and social responsibility. So that's what we're doing for farms. Ultimately, that benefit corporation pays farmers a dividend on the profits it earns. It also pays them for the materials that we secure from them, and that's the fair market price. We also we'll allow them to buy wholesale and resell for us to, and make a 50% margin on the retail of the product in their local markets. And we had, a great partner in Stamford, New York, buy a pallet of our product this week to put out at their farm stand. They said it's been selling so successfully for them, they're able to double their money on the crop that they sold us and convert it into a consumer packaged good. So it's a real advantage, and if we can just simply share our story with as many of those partners as we can, we can help them win in a way that they never could achieve on their own.
That's awesome, and like hidden in there is a great story of letting the free market move dollars around into what I presume to be mostly rural areas. There's a very cool, I think, relevant, particularly at this moment, story in there of what's going on. So that's awesome. Reluctantly moving on from some interesting topics. We care a lot, Jeff's best. So I have not tried the sparkling tree water. I look forward to it. I want to start at the beginning, though, when I talk about taste. If I am at a maple tree farm and that water is, I doubt this is the right word, but extracted, or because the sugar is extracted from it. And if I taste that water right there, what will it taste like or not taste like?
Yeah, it will taste like a truly crisp and clean. And when I say crisp and clean, those are the two words that most commonly define our product when people taste it. Because it has very limited mineral content relative to the ground, doesn't have any influence on the product. So the tree produces three basic minerals and sugar. It does have amino acids and polyphenol chains that belong to the sugar molecule, but you extract that, you take those with it. So what's remaining in the product is basically magnesium, potassium, calcium, and the parts per million, it's about 40 parts per million dissolved solid. So it's about 10 times clearer than a groundwater product. And the reason for that is, the reason for the taste is that it's truly you don't have the influence on the palate of those groundwater minerals. So if you were to drink water from a well supply or a municipal supply, you might take all those hard minerals or even fluoride or chloride or other chemicals that are treatment chemicals in the waters. This does not destroy your palate. It allows you to really taste water, I believe, for the first time in its true form. And so people have resoundingly said, wow, this is really crisp. It's really refreshing. It doesn't dry my palate out. And I taste a hint of sweetness on my palate, but yet there's no sugar in the product. And so I like to believe that the flavor that is exposed by the tree's production, the saps. So it's a really, really good tasting product. I think if any indication, I just got an email from the executive chef at Corning Incorporated, one of our customers. And Corning operates 7 cafeterias for their employees in the food service industry for, basically their employee benefit on site. And the note said, as of last month, we started carrying Osterhasi sparkling tree water. Our sales of sparkling water have grown 50% as a result of carrying your product over other sparkling waters, and we offer a lot of options. And it just really is a true testament to the fact that people, when they discover it, they feel like they've discovered something special. They adopt it, and the taste really has left such a strong impression of keep coming back to that product over others.
Wow. Congratulations. I'd imagine that we've all become conditioned to think that the water we taste is correct. Meaning, various right. fluorides, minerals, and I know this varies by region and arguably even down to probably the neighborhood level. But given how much water we all consume, I'd imagine that we're conditioned to not fully be able to recognize when something is clean and crisp. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would. Your palate is a very intelligent sense. And I don't think we give our palate enough credit because we're overpowering it with lots of things, especially sugar. People that have been desensitized to their palate by sugary products, which erodes the taste of most everything else, or salt for that matter, these spices and seasonings and influence our ability to taste things. It truly is. When you've grown up to expect something to taste a certain way, tasting something with new eyes, should I say, for the first time is really enlightening.
Wow, it's an interesting concept to just wrap our head around. You've been very generous with your time, and I want to respect that. So let's talk about where folks can find your product, and I will also mention you have a website that people can explore more, and it's at asarasi.com, which is ASARASI.com. And so tell us where we can find this product. And I'm curious as well how you came to the name Osterhasi also.
Yeah, so I guess why don't we, so Osterhasi.com, you can check out our where to buy. We are rapidly growing in grocery, specialty retailer, food service, and on-premise consumption, and opportunities are finding us everywhere we turn. Because we've advanced the conversation and people are really interested. So if you're in the New England market, hundreds of different restaurants and specialty retailers carrying our product, mostly in food service. We are going into regional grocery store chains like Top, Shaw's, our markets. We are now at the end of this month in over 100, I believe, ShopRite stores in the Mid-Atlantic and New England markets. So we're growing very, very fast. And it's just very interesting to watch. We just opened up distribution with Mountain Valley Springwater Los Angeles. And so, you know, as a brand that hasn't ever distributed any other beverage product, but yet knew that their growth was going to come likely from outside the space that they occupied, because they're well established and so well established that their market saturated. Unless you iterate and, you know, continuous line extensions, your growth has to come from other areas of opportunity. So we just launched with Mountain Valley Springwater this week. And so in Southern California, we'll be opening up that market. We just opened up distribution in the Buffalo marketplace. We are now nationally distributed by UNFI and KeHE. So if you're in a grocery store in Wisconsin, say Sendix, or you're in Wegmans, you can ask your retailer to carry it and they'll be able to bring it in within a day's time. We are opening up markets in Australia, Puerto Rico, United Arab Emirates, and internationally as well. So we're just blessed to be able to see this type of growth and opportunity, and we'll continue to update our website as more stores come online. Now, the name is unique. There was two reasons I came up with the name. One is that a product has to have a story, and every brand has to have a home and a level of authenticity. And I thought about it, and as a product creator for many years, I was always fascinated with Latin. Acerasi is the Latin for the genus and species of the maple tree. So Acerasia sicorum is the Latin for that, the maple species. And so I had the luxury of shortening that and making that our name. So our water comes from the roots of the tree and our name comes from the roots of the language. So I hope that's a fun story for people to engage with. And it also gives us some great, SEO, search engine optimization on Google. So if you Google search organic water, you'll see us consistently at the top of the feeds. You search our name and you will get instant results. So it helps the consumer find out who we are and where we are and why we are. Pretty quickly.
Awesome. Well, you've got a lot of momentum, it sounds like, in your, I want to wish you luck in your David versus Goliath battle. You've got a good slingshot though, and a solid value proposition. I think it's always helpful when you have, when you're trying to make that paradigm shift to have a product that can really change how people think about what they consume. And in this case, it's while sad to hear that a lot of great water is being wasted, it's exciting to hear that someone is doing something about that and doing it through, a great free market here of bottling that and selling it and moving it on. So I want to thank you for your time, Adam, and just wish you tons of luck. It's a really cool product, really cool story. And it sounds like you're making good inroads where you need to slay the giant, if you will.
Well, thanks. Yeah, thanks for the time and of course for the opportunity to come on the podcast and talk about Acerasi. One last shameless plug: if your listeners don't mind following us on Facebook at Acerasi Sparkling Tree Water, or on Twitter at Acerasi Water. We're also on Instagram. And then, of course, if they get a chance to visit our website and find out where to buy it, acerasi.com, you'll be very grateful for that opportunity. So thank you for your time and thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Adam.
Thank you for joining us on Just the Taste, the Chef's Best production. Join us again next time as we talk to more experts in marketing, retail, and production in the food and beverage industry. As always, visit chefsbest.com to learn more.